I just remember being so proud of Jeff. So grateful. Like, who does that? Like, you know, your girlfriend goes through cancer treatment and you sign up for a boxing tournament to potentially get the shit kicked out of you in front of a lot of people. I just felt so grateful to be able to call him at that time my fiance. You know, it was a special night for sure.
From Haymakers for Hope, this is Not Every Fight Ends at the Bell.
Haymakers for Hope exists to knock out cancer the only way we know how, fighting for a cure through charity boxing.
Thanks to generous supporters and more than 1,200 ass-kicking do-gooders, Haymakers has raised over $25 million for cancer research, care, awareness, and survivorship. But the march towards a cure continues long after the last bell of each event.
I'm Julie Kelly.
I'm Todd Buster Paris.
We know firsthand because we are not just your hosts, we are also survivors.
On this podcast, we will highlight the stories of fighters, survivors, organizations, and supporters. Not every fight ends at the bell.
Round one. Welcome to Not Every Fight Ends at the Bell. I am Julie Kelly. I am joined by my co-host, Todd Paris. Today, we have not one, but two guests who are going to share an incredible and inspiring story with us. First is 2017 Rock and Rumble alum, Jeff Scola, and the inspiration for his reason to step in the ring, his now wife, Katie. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us. We're excited to be here.
We're excited to talk to you and to share your story with everybody who listens. So 2017... Jeff, you stepped in the ring. You started training back in January.
Yep.
Give us a little insight into how you heard about Haymakers and then how you joined the gym. You trained out of Nonantum. So just walk us through that.
Yeah. And it was, you know, this whole thing was kind of one of those moments of serendipity, I guess. Or, you know, I've heard people call them like God wings, for example. But times when things all come together, right? And I had been working at EMC, which is now part of Dell Technologies, for 6 years at that point. And it's where I met my now wife, Katie, at the time, my girlfriend. We just moved in together. And I had moved teams, without like getting into a long story here, but my new boss, a gentleman named Tom O'Toole, I started working for him in January of 2016. And he was just kicking off training for Haymakers at the time, as well as another gentleman named Mike Keaveney, who both fought in 2016. Both won. I think actually EMC alums have an undefeated track record in Haymakers at this point.
You might be right.
It was funny. We didn't even talk about it. I've been working with a guy for a few weeks when we got the news that Katie, you know, when she was diagnosed with breast cancer, which obviously was kind of world rocking. And he's like, you know, do whatever you got to do. He was unbelievable. He was my direct manager at the time. So he gave me all the support I needed throughout that year. Meanwhile, he's training for this. He's got young kids at home, like he had a lot on his plate and he never let me know it, but he had gotten plugged in with Haymakers and the Ellie Fund, we are probably familiar with and happy to share more about them, but through his neighbor, also maybe a Haymakers alum, but he was on the board of the Ellie Fund at the time. And basically we went that year, went to Haymakers the first time in 2016. It was awesome. This is unbelievable, like incredibly inspiring, moving experience. I think particularly because, you know, Katie was going through a treatment. We were going through all that at the time. And coming out of it, he's like, you're next. It's like, buddy, I just watched 15 groups of people, you know, beat each other up for the last 3 hours. I liked being up in the balcony with a beer in my hand. I don't know if I want to do this, but he challenged me and he pushed me to do it the next year. He got me plugged in with yourself, Julie, and all the other folks over there. And I'm having a conversation with Katie and it was kind of, I think, her way of telling me I'd gotten out of shape. But she was like, you've sacrificed so much for me over the last year. Like, why don't you take care of yourself now? Like, you know, I'm through the core of my treatment. So go get in the ring and get yourself in shape. But that was it, you know. And I trained at the same gym as Tom. It was near our office in Newton at the time, called Nonantum. Those guys are awesome. It's like, I remember walking up in the first day. I was like walking into the scene from Ray Donovan. You guys are familiar with that show?
Yes.
And just fell in love, like completely addicted to it. You know, Mark was great. Brian Bannon, who was my trainer, was awesome. So that was it.
I read the blog that Chris Randa wrote about you guys. So to give you a little background. So Chris Randa, you know, we'll link it in the show notes. It's a really incredible insight into your story. And he mentions February 5th. If you wouldn't mind just walking us through February 5th.
Yeah, definitely. So the story, I think, kind of began prior to that. You know, it was only a week. I know both you, Julie and Todd, are survivors yourself. So dates and times you just will never forget in your life, you know. And looking back, I was incredibly healthy, stronger than I really ever was, running a lot. And it was a Sunday, and, you know, we found a lump on my left side. And I remember not being worried at all. You know, I was very fortunate to live a very healthy life up to that point, and I felt totally fine. I kind of rolled my eyes, and Jeff was really like, Katie, you should call the doctor. You should call the doctor. So Monday morning in traffic, I was like, you know, I guess I will just give a call and schedule an appointment with my gynecologist. It had been probably just over a year since my last appointment, if I'm remembering correctly. So I was definitely due. If there was no traffic that day, I wonder when I would have called, you know, honestly. And it was pretty quick after that. You know, I went in the next day. They thought it felt like there was some fluid in there, would mean that it was nothing to be concerned about, but they wanted me to come in for an ultrasound. I was in for an ultrasound a couple of days later. I remember the radiation oncologist spending a lot of time, and I'm thinking like, okay, what is she seeing? Cause I don't get it. It's a gray blob on the screen, you know?
Right.
And she's like, let's do a mammogram. We went in to do a mammogram. For one reason or another, they decided to actually skip the mammogram once I was in the room to go right to a biopsy. So that was a little scary because you're like, I'm just going in for an ultrasound. And then all of a sudden you're laying in a chair holding this stranger's hand, the nurse, and they're walking you through what's going to happen when they do a biopsy on your left side. You know, at the time I was very afraid of needles. So I'm like, well, how did I get here? And there was a phone call the next day on February 5th about 2:30 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon saying, Katie, you have a cancer. Again, it's like one of those weeks that just stands still in time. It's like the before and the after. It's like the before where there's, you're young, you're 27, living with not a care in the world. Biggest care is like what work call I have next, or, you know, where are we going to go on vacation next? And, you know, in a moment's notice, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm spending an hour on a call with a nurse advocate learning all these things about breast cancer that I just never, ever thought I would be hearing. So crazy.
Yeah. 27 is very young. And that was 2016, right?
You got it. Yep.
Okay. 2016. And then I'm jumping ahead, but I just am, my mind is blown thinking about the fact that just over a year later from your diagnosis, you were running the Boston Marathon.
Yes, I was. I don't know if there were like angels' wings carrying me through that race or what, but, you know, again, fitness and wellness is kind of like therapy for me. And so when you're diagnosed with cancer, I think a lot of people would agree, there's a lot that you lose control of. You cannot control how you're going to feel from the medication. You can't control if it spreads. You can't control so many things, but one thing you can control is, of course, how you react to the news. You can control what you're putting in your body. You can control how you're treating your body throughout that time period. And, you know, I was determined to, quote, get my body back, build strength, try and hold on to as much as I could, give myself grace. But when I was on the other side, I was determined as quickly as possible. I wanted to get back to where I was. And I thought, by signing up for the Boston Marathon, as crazy as it might seem, that January, it was a goal and I would do my best without any time goals. I just wanted to finish. And it would almost be just like a celebration of all we had overcome and achieved the year prior. And it was a reminder to myself that in a time where there's so much uncertainty and so much unknown, there are things that I can control and I can, you know, get myself back to strength on the other side of this. I felt so fortunate to get to run that year. And it's honestly one of the best days of my life, for sure.
I want to back up a moment to February 5th. So February 5th, you're diagnosed with breast cancer. When did you tell Jeff? And Jeff, what was your reaction? Plus, you're the boyfriend at this time. You're not husband, you're not fiance. So I'm curious to know what your reaction was as well.
at the time it was a Friday, like I shared, and that winter, unlike these recent winters, we were getting a lot of snow, and that Friday was like a horrible blizzard. I will never forget. And so, you know, I was working from home, waiting for the doctor's call. Call came in like 2:30 to 3:00. And then you're on the phone for kind of a while. As soon as the radiation oncologist hung up after giving me the news, someone else called to walk me through and schedule some appointments. So I was probably on the phone for like an hour at that time, at least hour and a half. And I had considered calling Jeff as soon as I hung up the phone, but I knew he was on his way home from meetings and stuff. It was shortly after that. I think I was maybe on the phone with my mom or something, and I could see outside where I was standing on the phone, and I was upstairs at our house, and I saw his car park. And so I knew he was here and was coming inside. And I think I had a couple of missed texts from him, like, hey, any word from the doctor? And we had some spiral stairs at the time. I'll never forget. I came down the stairs as he walked in the front door, and I don't think he even had to ask by my face of what the diagnosis was and what the news was. And I'll let him share his side of the story.
I mean, it's, you have to talk about what the reaction was. It's a complete shock. You know, I think nobody at 27 years old expects that. We've gotten to know lots of folks and started to realize that it is more probably prominent than you would think, at least. And even though I was the one who kind of pushed her to go get it checked out, I don't know why in my mind, like, I probably was just trying to not let your mind go there. You know, like, you don't want to consider the possibility that it might be cancer, even though it's a lump, like, it felt like it. And they kept bringing her back. They skipped the mammogram right to biopsy. But yeah, it was just kind of crazy. I mean, I was actually on the phone with Tom outside. I was coming back from a meeting on the North Shore. And just to give you the kind of juxtaposition of like how quickly your life changes in an instant, he gave me my quota for the year. It was like the beginning of our fiscal year. Like, anybody who works in sales knows it's like a big thing, right? It helps to dictate your income and all that. And I'm like, how am I? It's like twice what it was the year before. I'm never going to get there. It was like the worst thing. Friday afternoon, I'm all pissed off. Like, you can't believe this. And then you walk in the door and it's like, and it is like, God, the shit I used to be concerned with is so meaningless when all of a sudden you're faced with something like that. And Katie will tell you, especially the time, I probably wasn't the most like warm and fuzzies person. So I was just like struggling to even like, what do you say? You know, like, we've never faced something like this before, either of us individually or as a couple, obviously. And so you're just like trying to process it in the moment. And I don't know, we laid on the bedroom floor for a couple hours. I think it was light when we laid down and dark when we got up. So I don't know how long it was, but yeah. And it's just like, Katie's family's out in the Midwest in Ohio, and we kind of made the decision like, we're going to do this here where we have some of the best care in the country, and we're going to do it together. And I will say, I think if I had known in that moment everything that we were going to go through, I don't know how I would have reacted, like how much harder it would have been. But like, it was kind of like, look, we're just going to figure this out day by day, and we're going to take everything task by task and process things as it comes through. And it's just kind of crazy to look back on now. It seems so long ago, but at the same time, you start to talk about it, feels like yesterday.
Yeah.
So getting that news, Katie, you said something really interesting, the spiral staircase. For me, anytime I think of when I was told I had cancer, up until my surgery, I didn't know what was going on. Then I had my surgery. The doctor and a whole bunch of students were gathered around my bed as I was coming to. And the surgeon told me, this guy was like a bull in a china shop, and he was so soft and caring, which is not like him. And he was like basically saying, I'm so sorry, you know, it's malignant and you have cancer. And I remember just looking up at the ceiling. And for me, my spiral staircase is chipped paint in the ceiling at Mass General in the room that I was in. And every time I think of the diagnosis, or every time I get that fear or that feeling, that's what I see. And for you, is it that? And Julie, for you, do you have one? Do you have a spiral staircase?
Similar to you, I had gone in to have a biopsy and they put me under. And despite the fact that I was 22, the surgeon essentially told my dad, they said, we can't say for sure because we have to wait for the biopsy to come back. But the guy said, it looks just like Hodgkin's lymphoma. But I didn't find out until I was at home enjoying some sushi, and my basketball and soccer coach, who lived just down the street from me, Mr. Pat Rasha, who is a king among kings, came to my door because he had been diagnosed about 3 years before with Hodgkin's lymphoma. And I saw him at the side door and I just was like, there it is. And he told me. So that's really just seeing, seeing Mr. Rasha at the door is kind of what I, you know, that's my mentality.
And Katie, for you, is it the spiral staircase?
When I got the call and when I heard the words come out of her mouth, I was sitting on our couch under a blanket with my laptop, you know, because I had been working. And it was like instant, move the laptop, take the blanket off. And I do think I went and I just sat on the first step and just listened to her. And for some reason, my instinct was like to go to the floor. I was like laying almost in like child's pose, but like with my hand on the phone and hand on my head, listening to what she was saying. And it's like, then I got up and the next call, I was upstairs on the floor. I don't know why the floor was, it was just like you just fall almost. And so I will say that spiral staircase, though, as we moved out of that apartment a few years ago, and I think Jeff and I can both agree, it was a very emotional move because we had so many highs and so many lows over the 5 or 6 years that we lived there. And that spiral staircase was key to many of them. I mean, I was shaking champagne 2016 season. The Cavs won the NBA finals. And for Cleveland, that's a big deal. And so I was on the staircase for that. We were on the staircase playing, blasting music the night before my big surgery, you know, and then I was on the floor when we got the news. So I think there are parallel feelings when I think of the spiral staircase for sure.
Yeah, that was my, I mean, it was the whole apartment, like the first floor, you could, you know, I don't know. It was like 10 by 10, basically. So like you walk in the door, you could basically reach the staircase to the other side of the living room. And I remember that seared in my brain of like her sitting on the staircase and her saying, give me the news. And it's just like, yeah, I don't know. It's crazy.
So post-diagnosis, treatment involved radiation, chemotherapy and radiation?
Yeah. So I had 2 rounds of chemotherapy. I started right away in chemo for 12 weeks. And then I had a bilateral mastectomy. And then I had more chemotherapy followed by an implant surgery later that year. And then I started radiation after they finished that second surgery. So all in all, it was about a year of treatment. And then I was on some hormone suppressants for about 5 years after that.
So all the treatment, 2 major surgeries, and you still ran a marathon.
I did.
She's going to downplay it, Julie.
I know. I can tell. I know what I'm dealing with. Now, that's why I'm going to shift to you. How was it for you seeing her across the finish line, knowing, not only knowing, but being the passenger for the last year, being an intimate partner going through the ride with her? What was that like?
It was hard. I mean, it was beautiful, but like, I think in the moment I just lost it. And, you know, over a beer, Katie can show you some funny pictures of me. You know, I think it was the most emotional I'd probably been, you know, the birth of our daughter, our wedding day, maybe. And I realized, I think in hindsight, it was probably a year's worth plus of emotion that had come up because, again, like this is stuff as you get older and you look backwards, you're like, all right, this is probably why I reacted the way I did. But when she got sick after that first day, I kind of just like went into, I don't know, help mode where it was like organizing, getting her family in and out, getting to and from appointments, making sure everything was okay. And that was helpful for me to just compartmentalize, like, we're going to take this day by day. And I don't know that with maybe a few exceptions, I ever really processed everything and the gravity of the situation and what could have happened. And then, you know, that day it was similar. Like she had some friends and family in town and we were like, again, herding cats, organizing, getting people. They wanted some folks at the start line, some in the middle. And then we were all kind of all regrouped at the end at the New Balance party at the Lenox. And, just like seeing her turn down Boylston, like I just lost it. And it was just like, you know, I don't think you forget that feeling and how proud I was and how fortunate I felt, not just to have her in my life, but that she could be there and do that. And, you know, if you've ever been near the finish line at the marathon, Boston Marathon, it's an emotional period, time, anytime, right? It's very inspiring, I think, at least. And to see her, I just, I was like inconsolable. I lost it. She's like happy and smiling and running down and waving to people. And I'm just sitting there sobbing like a baby. But, and I do like in hindsight, it was just like a year and a half's worth of emotion kind of bottled and pent up that finally came out. And I probably felt like I could because she was on the path to recovery and in remission at that point. And you could kind of finally start to think about that stuff. And it was heavy. And, but it was just such a beautiful moment. I just kind of lost it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that finish line is probably symbolic in some way. You know, it's the finish line of the marathon, 26.2 miles, which is a long, long, long road. And then to also cap it off for going through treatment, going through everything that you've gone through. And then what was it, a month later that you stepped in the ring, Jeff?
Yeah, just about a month, maybe 5 weeks. Huh. Yeah.
So you guys really, you guys are pretty boring. You don't do a lot.
Did you guys train together?
Not really.
Because he was in the gym, you know, so much, and I was on the road. So
sometimes we'd run. I'd run like the last couple miles of her route with her.
We had a good routine, like where he would drop me off in Hopkinton, and I would have the lonely run into about like Wellesley, and he would go right to the gym, work out, and then come pick me up in Wellesley after being at
Nomantum. Yeah, the time would work out,
Oh, that's a solid training system.
I thought you were going to say he would drop you off in Hopkinton, he'd go to the gym workout, then he'd meet you on the street as you're running past, and then you guys would continue running together.
Once or twice we did.
Yeah, he did. He did come meet me for a couple ends, which was nice because it was hard, but nowhere near as hard as boxing. I mean,
I would think I'd rather box than run 26 miles in a day of the week. That's why you know, the finish line, you see people crossing, they look like the walking dead. Like it's hard. I don't care who you are. Never mind if you just finished cancer treatment.
Yeah.
It's hard. I mean, I've done both and I'm with you, Jeff. I would rather somebody punch me in the face repeatedly.
Mm-hmm. It's over relatively quickly, at least compared to a 2.5 hour, whatever.
Those 6 minutes at the House of Blues were the longest 6 minutes of my life. So I don't know about that.
Welcome to the Producer's Corner, where I do a check-in with a fighter who you've met, Ben Heller. We're recording this on April 19th, just under 3 weeks from the Rock and Rumble, where tickets are still on sale.
Hey, Julian.
Hey, Ben. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I am doing well, sir. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So when your episode was recorded, you were at over $100,000 donated. Now, as we're recording this, you're closer to $185,000. How does it feel knowing that all that money is going towards the BCRF?
Well, it's really been my motivation this whole time is to just raise as much money as I can. And shamelessly asking people for more money and continuing to fundraise and continuing to remember people that I haven't connected with. And, you know, most people who know what's going on with Amanda's struggle and her fight are more than willing to give. And, you know, I'm, like I said in the episode, I'm fortunate to have some very successful friends and some very generous friends in there as well.
How is Amanda doing?
She's doing great. She's doing great. She's been helping me with getting people fired up for the fight. We've got, you know, a lot of people who are going to come and actually watch it. She has a table full of friends and family, and you know, I think she's excited for it. I think she's excited for it to be behind us a little bit too. Mm-hmm. It's you know, I'm spending a lot of time out and about trying to, you know, train and fundraise and stuff. And we've got, you know, life goes on. We've got 3 kids and sports are in full swing, so. It's, you know, it's another thing on our schedule, but it's an important one.
Yeah, most definitely. So after you are done in the ring on May 9th, how do you imagine that you're going to feel, you know, once you hear that final bell?
Oh, wow. I haven't really thought about the final bell yet. I've been thinking a lot about the opening bell. and, you know, I don't know how I'm going to feel then either. I've got some, I think it's healthy anxiety about the fight, but to answer your question, when it's all over, I think I'm going to look back with some pride and knowing I've accomplished something, whatever happens in the the 6 minutes of actual fighting. But, you know, what I set out to do was raise a lot of money, and I've done that. You know, that mission is accomplished. I can always do more. But I do think that the sport and more importantly, the organization is something that I want to be a part of going forward. And what that means and how that looks in the future, I don't know. It's been a great experience where I feel like I've connected with some really good people who have a mission that will always be important to me no matter what.
I love that. Ben, I really appreciate you checking in with me in the producer's corner. For all that are listening, Rock and Rumble is on May 9th, 2024. So it's not too late to contribute to Ben, to contribute to the Breast Cancer Research Fund. So please, after this episode, go to haymakersforhope.org and donate today. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you so much.
Not Every Fight Ends at the Bell is presented by Haymakers for Hope. To donate, sponsor, attend an event, or better yet, to sign up to be one of our ass-kicking do-gooders, visit haymakersforhope.org. Round two. Jeff, walk us through training, and then after this, Katie, I want to hear about, you know, I just got Jeff's input about him seeing you accomplish your major feat, so to then get through your eyes. But Jeff, what was training like?
It was tough. It was really hard. I would tell anybody who's about to start the training, it's harder than you think it's going to be. No matter how hard you think it's going to be, it is harder. But I loved it. I'll never forget walking into Notre Dame, some like legit true boxing gym, and talking to the guy who runs, this guy, Mark Argar, who's on the USA Boxing Olympic team, coaches, and he's great. And you kind of know who you're dealing with right away. I was like, hey, you know, I got to shed 5 pounds, whatever it was. And he's like, any advice? Thinking he'll have some like, you know, cut your carbs down and, you know, do this and hit training. And he just looks at me like I had five heads, like, you know, eat less and work out more. And I was like, okay, this is the black and white, like, hey, great advice, but...
That's Mark in a nutshell.
Yeah, and those guys are great. Like I said, Brian Bannon, he's a full-time firefighter in Newton. He was my trainer. I had to work out a lot before work, just schedule-wise. So he'd get up, meet me there at 5:45. You know, we trained for 90 minutes or so. And then even on days where he wasn't going into work, he was going back home again. He never complained. He was motivating me. And we'd spar all around Boston. It was great. You know, it was 5 days, 6 days a week, sometimes a couple times a day, sparring twice a week. Definitely, you think you're tough, you think you got guts. And then when you're in a little, whatever it is, 10 by 10 square with somebody else, and the goal is like, all right, do a better job of hitting each other. You know, you find out pretty quickly just how much guts you have. But I'm very, very glad. I feel very fortunate for the opportunity. And it was, I will say, like, not only got in great shape, but just like an awesome experience all around.
Jeff, what would you say was your favorite part of training?
Finishing, probably.
Fair enough.
No, I think, honestly, like, I liked a lot of it. I love the people that I was training with. There was two other Haymakers contestants at No Nantum. And I think because they do fitness classes, they do a ton of stuff, even more now, but it's primarily a boxing training gym. So there was a lot of people that were in there to learn how to box and at varying different stages in their own development and skills. And so you had the opportunity to spar with a ton of different people, train with a ton of different people, and just like this great camaraderie. And then obviously whenever we would have the chance to get together with the broader Haymakers group, you know, that was great too, right? You just kind of like share war stories, for lack of a better expression, and get to know each other better. It was really the community element of it was probably, frankly, my favorite part.
Let's talk a little bit about fight night. You're at the House of Blues.
Yeah.
Huge crowd. Round one, within the first 10 seconds, your opponent was Paul Grossman, and you knocked him back. What did that feel like for you?
I don't remember that so much as I remember him catching me, like, square in the nose shortly thereafterwards, and that didn't feel too good. But I frankly, like, don't remember a ton about the actual fight itself. I remember probably toward the end. I remember sitting down right on the stool in between rounds and being gassed and just trying to like listen to Brian and Mark and what they're coaching me through. I remember obviously the beginning and all that, and then the end. But the actual fight itself, I don't remember a ton. I do remember just like a moment where I thought I was going to lose. If the fight ended at this point, whether it was the second round, beginning of the third round, I'm like, I'm not going to win this. They end this right now. And just feeling like it's just something inside it takes over. I didn't train and get my ass kicked for the last 4 months. and go through all this and think about everything Katie went through to walk away here losing, or at the very least not giving it, like dying in the ring, or, you know, close to it, and getting like a little boost from that. But yeah, I don't know. I don't remember too much about the actual details of the fight, I'll be honest with you, Todd. So I remember this, Julie, with you and whoever else was running Haymakers at the time.
Yep.
We had to get to House of Blues at like 3 in the afternoon or 4 in the afternoon.
Usually between 4 and 4:30.
Yeah. And so we're all there, all fired up. Show starts at maybe 7. And that you don't know when you're fighting until you get there. They give you your random draw. I was the second to last fight. And I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me. It's like, what do I do? Go home? Like, no, I'm here now.
You can't.
And so you're just sitting there, you're pacing, you're watching all the other fights. Just like the tension and the nerves build throughout that first couple of hours. You know, in hindsight, it was cool to think about, like just getting to watch everybody as a second to last fight. But it was tough. Like that first couple hours were brutal.
Yeah, it really tests that mental fortitude. I've been there. It's not easy. Well, that's what makes boxing so hard is A, the physical component, and then also that mental component. Now, Katie, how was it for you on event night? What was going through your mind? We know what Jeff was thinking, besides being angry for me for putting him second to last. But what was going through your mind while you were waiting there for him to go?
Yeah, so I remember my dad and sister came into town, and we arrived at the event a little bit. It had already started. I think maybe it was like the second or third fight. And I don't know why we had tickets that were on the upper level, and there were so many people there to support Jeff. We all had t-shirts, New Balance, and my family made all these t-shirts, which were amazing. I just like could not be downstairs. Like there's just, it's where all the people were, right? Like it was so fun down there, but I just like was so nervous. So we entered for some reason up on the second level. And so I had a very clear view down into the ring. And I was watching a grown man. I mean, probably like a 6'4" man. He looked like he had baby deer legs, like up against the ropes, like not doing well. And I was like, what did he say? Like, I can't do this. Like, I cannot watch Jeff like get hit and hit and hit. And if that's how this is going to go, like, and I remember for some reason I could, like, the lights were up and I could see Jeff through the curtain watching also like on the other side backstage. And I just was like, how am I going to do this? I was so sick. I was so nervous. Long story short, we get to his fight. I was upstairs with his mom and my sister, and something like took over. I mean, good luck to my daughter if she's going to play sports when she's younger, but it was like my nerves turned into just straight like mama bear, like screaming over the balcony, like for Jeff, rooting with everything I had for him. It's like, I was so nervous leading up to him to see him get hit. But then when it started, it's like, I was like, let's go, you know, like just so excited for him. He had worked so hard. And I mean, I was shaking. I mean, the emotion that Jeff discussed after the marathon is what I was feeling when he was in that fight. And it was such an intense fight. I felt like Paul was incredible. At the end, I was like, I don't even know. They both left it all in the ring. It was like so clear that they were both fighting for something so much bigger than themselves. And it's just such an emotional night. It's such an awesome, awesome event. And I mean, you literally can see in every single person that steps in that ring, the desire to win, the care, the fight is just so real. And I just remember being so proud of Jeff. So, so grateful. Like, who does that? Like, your girlfriend goes through cancer treatment and you sign up for a boxing tournament to potentially get the shit kicked out of you in front of a lot of people. I just felt so grateful to be able to call him at that time my fiance. So it was a special night for sure.
Yeah, you and Paul put on a great show. You both fought with your hearts out. And it was amazing. And even more so, you raised almost $18,000 for the Ellie Fund. So I know you had mentioned them earlier, but could you tell us a little bit more about your connection and Katie's connection and just a little bit more about the Ellie Fund and what they do?
Yeah. And I'll let Katie share a bunch of details because she worked so closely with them for a while. But We got connected through Tom, I think it was.
Mass General Hospital.
MGH too, when she was in treatment. And, you know, Dana-Farber and some of these other larger organizations are amazing. They're doing this incredible work. But the thing that kind of drew us both to the Ellie Funds and that connection through MGH, we kind of saw day to day what they were doing. And a little bit more grassroots, like different, right? But the support that they offered monetarily in terms of, you know, services, help, transportation, food, funds for local families who have been impacted by breast cancer was really moving and really inspiring. And then just, you know, happened that my boss's friend was on the board and there was kind of all these parallel connections. So when I was selected after applying to fight, it was kind of a no-brainer that having seen it firsthand, right, that I wanted to raise funds for them.
Yeah. And then I remember when I was in treatment, I got very close with my social worker and I remember asking her, are there any local charities that have been impactful to the cancer center? And she mentioned the Ellie Fund and it's local. Like Jeff said, you know, they don't provide help for paying medical bills, but they provide help for literally anything else you can think of. And when you're going through treatment, again, as I'm sure both of you can recall, life doesn't stop. You know, you still have bills to pay, rent to pay, your car, your kids, groceries, cooking meals. The Ellie Fund can come in and help with any sort of life expense. And, you know, they make a huge difference. I started delivering meals for them. They do a ton of work here locally. So I thought it was really meaningful to pick a charity that was local to the New England area and benefiting patients and survivors, you know, locally. So it was great.
Yeah, they do incredible work, and we've had a lot of people support them over the years.
Yes. Yeah,
they're awesome.
Jeff, if you could tell someone who's about to embark on this four-month boxing journey, if you could tell them just one thing, what would you tell them?
Keep your hands up.
That's good advice.
That would be helpful advice. I would say it's kind of a cliche advice, but just soak it all in, like appreciate every single moment. You know, there was days where, especially like a Saturday morning spar session, like the last thing I wanted to do early in the morning in the middle of the winter was drive to Northampton and go and fight and spar for a couple hours. But even the hard things, just like soak it in because it is such a unique experience. And, you know, to get just the services that you do through Haymakers, connections, you know, through all the different gyms and the access that you get and the network you get to build. Not to mention like win, lose, or draw, that fight night is just such an incredible experience. Just enjoy every moment because it will go quickly. And then you'll look back and say, man, I, you know, once the scars heal, so to speak, but you're like, I would do that again. I want that, the lows and the highs again. And it's tough to replicate. So just enjoy every moment, even the tough ones. That'd be my biggest piece of advice.
Not Every Fight Ends at the Bell is presented by Haymakers for Hope. Did you know there's more to Haymakers than just boxing? We also have opportunities for you to lace up your sneakers and run a marathon with Team Haymakers. Or grab your clubs and play in one of our golf tournaments. Visit haymakersforhope.org for more. Round three. I think we just need to really talk about another major event, since that's kind of been the theme of this podcast, a major event for the two of you that is fairly recent.
Yes. Our daughter, she's almost 3.5 months old, which is crazy. And she is the light of our lives. She's just brought so much joy. I was recently, we're in Rhode Island, and this morning drove back to Boston, and on the drive, I was just reflecting a lot, knowing we had this podcast coming up. And it's just crazy to think of so much that can happen in a year, let alone 8 years, you know? And when you're 27, at the time, a lot of my friends were getting married, they were having babies and starting that part of their lives. And I felt so stuck, you know, like, I don't know if that'll ever happen for me, for us, I'm just not going to really think about it. But I was all the while hearing from all my friends and so happy for them going through this. So to finally get to this point in life and get to experience that joy for ourselves and pregnancy, even it's been like the best year of my life, really. And I think, I don't want to speak for Jeff, but I would think his too.
Yeah. I mean, it's, and even just the parallels, I mean, Katie's doctor, right, our OB, was on in the same building in Yawkey at MGH, right, where the cancer center is, which was hard some days. You know, you go back there and you're in the elevator with folks and you know where they're going. You can try to put yourself in their shoes. Everyone's story is different, obviously. But then you've got this beautiful thing that you're there for, right? And it was kind of this full circle moment, and it has been. And I mean, she keeps us busy. We're not sleeping as well as we probably would like, but otherwise, it's been unbelievable.
It gets better.
I keep saying that. I hope so.
I promise. Yeah.
But no, I think like you talk about haymakers, Jeff, talking about all the hard moments, but all the high moments as well, just in training. And it's, you know, you have that perspective in anything you go through in life. It's like life is hard. No one gets out of here with an easy ticket. And if you can learn to celebrate the small wins when you're in the lows, and the highs are so much sweeter. And like, even in parenthood, it's like awake at 3 a.m., awake at 4 a.m., but it's like, one day I'm going to miss this, you know? So this is hard. We are like in it. But all these things that life's thrown at our way up until this point has made this whole journey with Scarlett almost seem like somehow beautiful, so great, you know, even the really, really hard times. So I just feel very, very fortunate.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
As we're wrapping up, Jeff, why should someone sign up to participate?
Well, just, you know, aside from the fact that you'll have the opportunity to raise funds for just a desperately needed, but some amazing causes, I would say, regardless of your motivation, right, why you're kind of thinking about it in the first place, I don't know that there's a similar opportunity to physically buy in the way that you probably are already mentally, right? And with your efforts, your thoughts, your emotions, your paycheck, right? Whatever else, your time and energy toward these causes, there's a million great ways to give back and to support folks who have been affected by cancer in any way. But I don't know that there's a way that you could replicate the physical element of it and the connection that that gives. You know, you joke like you're literally fighting, right? Cancer, fight cancer, you're literally doing it. There's a very raw, very visceral, emotional, I guess it's a connection there, right? And again, win, lose, or draw, like having gone through that and pushed yourself physically and mentally the way that you have to, it's a privilege to do. And I think you will come out, no matter who you are, changed for the better in one way or another from the experience. And I think that that is unique to boxing for so many reasons. And it's, of course, just the people like Julie and Todd yourself and all the others who are involved, Jordan, of course, who you get to meet these great people and work with them, and they're doing amazing work every day. There's a million different reasons, but I would say like it's such a unique challenge that it's worth it for anybody to go through.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you guys.
Thank you.
This was really amazing. Thank you for sharing your story. It's really inspiring and it's incredible, just the two of you, to where to 2016 to now. It's amazing. And we are so grateful to have you.
Thank you so much.
You're very much.
Thanks, guys. Thank you for taking the time to listen. We're grateful for your support.
If you enjoyed this episode, please follow the podcast and tell a friend. To donate, sponsor, attend an event, or better yet, sign up to fight to KO cancer, visit haymakersforhope.org.
Not Every Fight Ends at the Bell is presented and produced by Haymakers for Hope in partnership with Studio Pod Media. Our producers are former fighters Jordan McMillan and Julian Lewis.
I'm Julie Kelly.
And I'm Todd Buster Paris.
You've been listening to Not Every Fight Ends at the Bell.